before we start looking at the actual spices, I want you to take me back a bit and tell me about growing up with your parents, presumably in a spice shop.
Well, it wasn't exactly a spice shop. Mum and Dad had a herb nursery, and they started this in the mid-1950s. So I was around about 6 or 7 years old when they started it. And I grew up with herbs all around me. Mum and Dad were growing them, and as I got older, I'd help Dad propagating them, and we'd pick them to sell. The whole thing was that I think during that childhood, I absorbed a lot of a feeling for flavours and herbs and spices to a degree, just by osmosis, because it's around you all the time. And then as Mum and Dad's business started to grow, because herbs were a bit unusual back then, and, you know, in the mid-1960s...
In Sydney, right?
Yeah, in Sydney, growing herbs, that's legal herbs, that is, was pretty unusual. And in my later years at school, for fairly obvious reasons, I got the nickname Herbie, which people have been calling me for many years now. And then Dad started to import some spices, and so we, the family business, sold both herbs and spices. After I left school, I worked in the family business for several years until my parents retired and sold their property. They had a 5-acre property outside of Sydney, about 30 miles from Sydney. I went to Singapore, managed a spice company in Singapore, intended to work in the industrial world. So I was selling to large food manufacturers involved in the more industrial side of spices. But of course, what happened was when I was in Singapore, I was really introduced to the world of spice. There were the wonderful Indian shops and restaurants down in Serangoon Road. And of course, as part of my work, I was traveling to other places around Southeast Asia. And probably one of the most life-defining moments for me was when the Singapore Manufacturers Association asked me to represent Singapore at the first international spice group meeting that was held in New Delhi in India in 1986. And that was my first trip to India. And I just fell in love with the Indians, with their spices, their food. And the journey has really continued on since then. I continued for about another 10 years in the corporate world, still in the spice industry. And just on nearly 18 years ago, my wife and I decided to start our little spice business in Sydney. And what we wanted to do was to provide people with all of the spices they needed, regardless of the cuisine they were cooking. So whether they were doing Middle Eastern, Indian, traditional European, and they needed juniper berries, we wanted to have everything in the one place. We also wanted to focus on quality, which of course is a very subjective issue, because everyone everywhere in the world will tell you their product is the best quality. But of course, spices are agricultural commodities, and where they're grown, how they're harvested, the post-harvest handling and cleaning, how they're ground, how they're stored after grinding, how they're transported. All of these elements make a huge difference to the final quality. But last but not least, over the years, one of the things I'd experienced most were people saying, oh, I'd like to use more spices, but I'm not a very good cook. And we would say to them, well, that's terribly sad. Have you ever made a casserole? Have you ever put something on the barbecue? Have you ever pan-fried something? Have you ever made a stir-fry? Have you ever made a soup? Everybody can cook, really. You know, there are lots of different cooking styles, and of course you can use lots of complex methods. But when you come to basic cooking, essentially everybody can do it. So what we wanted to do was demystify the world of herbs and spices, so people could understand how they could use these wonders of nature, these beautiful flavours, in a lot of the foods that they're already familiar with, and to cook in a way that doesn't have to be out there and left field. And for that reason, that's why I wrote the book, The Spice and Herb Bible, was to demystify spices, help people understand them, help them understand spice blends too, because one of the magic that happens is when you start to bring the different flavours together. You might look at turmeric on its own and think, oh yeah, you know, it smells a bit earthy, yeah, okay. But of course, then combine that turmeric with a little bit of cumin, a little bit of coriander, some cardamom, some cloves, some allspice, some ginger, a little touch of chili, boom, boom, you've got just an amazing flavour profile. So what I wanted to do in the book was to demystify that whole bringing together of the different flavours.
Well, I have to say, when the book got delivered, my nephew was visiting. He picked it up first, actually, and he got lost in it. I'm like, what is he doing? And then I picked it up, and I went, I got lost in it. Because it's kind of like when you go into a dictionary, and you look up one word, and then you make things about another word. And then I got lost in the cardamom section right away.
Yeah, good one to get lost in, actually.
Yeah, because there's some different kinds I hadn't heard of and that. So let's go down here and have a look at some of these things here. And
well, they've got a wonderful display of spices here, of course, because a lot of people say what country, you know, uses the most spices, and undeniably it is India. People will sometimes say, you know, oh, but I want some Moroccan spices. Most of the spices that you will purchase in Morocco have already come from India, or they're spices that are grown in India as well as Morocco. What makes them Moroccan is the flavour combinations that they use, which will be different to Indian. And for that reason, if you go to an Indian spice shop, that's the place where you'll find the biggest range of spices, because they grow so many. And in front of us here, we've got things like cumin seeds, which are often referred to as the curry spice. We're very familiar with the flavour in curries. It's, of course, used in the lovely nut blend dukkha, which gives it a beautiful depth of flavour. Mexican food, it's a very important ingredient in Mexican. It helps to give it its characteristic flavour. And although a lot of people, when they first come across cumin, they think that they're dealing with something that is very Indian, very curry-like, it will actually go with lots of other foods extremely well, because it's got a lovely warmth and depth of flavour that is not always curry-like when it's blended with other ingredients.
Sure, because if you said, okay, this is Mexican food and this is Indian food, they both have cumin in them, you go, what? They taste completely different.
Exactly, yeah. And that, again, that reinforces this whole variation thing. And then, of course, one of the next most important spices is coriander seed. And what I find interesting about coriander seed is, of course, when it's that plant is fresh, we call the leaves cilantro. And when the plant has flowered and gone to seed and we collect the seeds, we get a seed with a completely different flavour to cilantro. Coriander seed is one of the most useful spices people can have in the kitchen, because what you find with coriander seed is it's what I call an amalgamating spice. That is, it is a spice that blends very effectively with nearly all other spices. Coriander has the ability to amalgamate flavours together. It also has the ability to take away slightly sharp or disparate notes that may not be working too well. It is interesting to note that many years ago, an extract of coriander seed used to be used to take the bitter notes out of some medicines. And I sometimes call coriander seed a rescue spice. If you've made a casserole or you've made something, you know, sometimes you make something and think, oh, gee, it's a bit sharp, or, you know, maybe used a bit too much of one ingredient than another. I've put in up to a tablespoon of ground coriander seed, cooked that dish for a bit longer. You would be amazed at the degree to which it brings everything together and balances it out.
I know a chef who, he mixes coriander and salt together, and he uses that as his sprinkling salt when he's cooking at the stove. He reaches into that, puts it in everything.
Yep, absolutely. I can quite understand that. That makes a lot of sense. Also here in front of us, we've got some of the more, you might say, ones that you use in much lesser quantities but are still very important. Cloves. Cloves are amazing. There are actually a dried, unopened flower bud that comes from a tropical evergreen tree that's native to the Indonesian archipelago. And the lovely thing about cloves is that although they are very strong, when they are used in small quantities, they add a real level of vibrancy to a spice combination. Therefore, if you're making a curry, a Moroccan lamb shank tagine, any of those sorts of dishes, the addition of cloves is absolutely essential. Another little interesting point about cloves, which I find, is, see, the natural world is incredible. We all know fresh basil very well. We think of basil as a tomato herb, and we're all familiar with it. Next time you've got some fresh basil, crush the leaves, smell them very carefully, and what you will detect is a faint hint of cloves, because the basil leaf contains the volatile oil eugenol that you also find in cloves. So why do I tell you this? If you're doing any tomato dish, pasta sauce, the tiniest pinch of cloves added will enhance the flavour enormously. So it's not only basil that goes with tomatoes. A subtle amount of cloves will also enhance the flavour. of any of those tomato dishes beautifully. We're all very familiar with green cardamom pods, and there are some here somewhere, I know, which is, you know, one of the real basics of cooking with spices. And there are also the black cardamom, black or brown cardamom, they're often called. These are extremely interesting because although they're a member of the same family, the flavour profile is completely different. And the brown cardamom pod has an amazing smoky note. And if you love your Indian food, but you don't have the luxury of a tandoor out in the back garden, then what I suggest is using the black or brown cardamom pods to add that lovely, deep, smoky note to the dishes that you're cooking. A lot of Western writers have been very disparaging of this spice. They've often called it bastard cardamom, false cardamom, and said that it's inferior to green. They're completely wrong. It is completely different to green. Should not be compared.
Well, and I can see by the price, so it's 300 grams, it's $14.
Yeah.
It's not cheap either.
No, I know, it's not cheap. And of course...
But that probably goes a long way.
Goes a long way. And the other thing, of course, people must remember about spices, people shouldn't expect them to be too cheap because, again, it comes back to the whole quality issue. The other thing that it comes back to as well is that spices tend to be grown in fairly small holdings, fairly small family-owned farms. You don't get the broadacre monoculture with spices that you get with tea, coffee, rice, all the various grains, etc. And for that reason, you've got a situation where you've got all these small farmers, they're growing, they're then selling to a local trader. The trader will be grading depending upon cleanliness and quality, and then it's people like us who are in the spice business who will buy from those traders. And I have a very strong feeling that consumers need to be aware of the fact that if they pay a bit more for a spice, in most cases it means that the farmer is getting a bit more, and I do think they deserve that. But not only do they deserve it, for our long-term sustainability, they need it, because if they don't earn a reasonable income from their farms, their kids are going to go and do IT in Bangalore, and they're not going to work in the family business. So where are we going to get spices from if we lose all these family spice farms? And I think that that's something that will progress. And let's face it, for the cost, as you said, a little goes a long way. And so you buy a spice like this, that will have a shelf life of 2 to 3 years at least after you've used this. And spices never go off.
Never whole go spices.
Bad. Whole spices, even ground ones. No spice ever actually goes off. But what happens is the flavour gradually deteriorates.
Yeah.
And if people just keep that in mind, keep them in a well-sealed pack, keep them away from extremes of heat and light and humidity, and they'll be fine. And then, of course, you know, we're just really beginning to scratch the surface. We haven't quite got there yet. we have mustard. Now, you'll find mustard used a lot in Indian cooking. Most of us Westerners are very familiar with a prepared mustard or a jar of mustard paste that we then have with our corned beef or whatever. Mustard seeds are used a lot in Indian cooking, and the interesting thing is that very often they don't add very much heat. And the reason for this is the way they cook them. You've probably noticed in an Indian recipe it will say to fry the mustard seeds until they pop. Well, what happens with mustard is mustard gets its heat because the enzyme that's in the mustard seed is activated by moisture. So you chew a mustard seed, it'll be hot because your saliva will activate the enzyme. You make some mustard paste by adding water to mustard powder, water activates the enzyme. However, take some mustard seeds, fry them in a pan till they pop, that kills the enzyme. Therefore, what the mustard does, it adds a beautiful nutty flavour to the dish. But it's not really adding heat.
Now, I want you to explain two things here.
Yeah.
I'm looking at curry powder.
Yes.
And I'm looking at garam masala.
Yes.
What's the difference? Well, there's so many questions about
yeah,
that. But
yeah,
but
yeah.
When I look at this, this is very nondescript. You know, it's kind of generic curry powder. Do we really know what's in that?
Well, you'd probably know once you open the packet. My guess would be looking at it, that to me it looks like a fairly traditional, what I would tend to call a Madras style curry powder. Curry powders are something that were very much developed by the English, so that when they went home they could still relive the experience of their lovely Indian food. But of course, now the Indians make lots of curry powders, and you know, you could make probably 20 different curry powders quite easily. But if something is labelled just curry powder, you're probably looking at a Madras style. It's not going to be a hugely hot curry. It's going to have quite a lot of turmeric in it. It will also have quite a lot of cumin. There will be ground coriander. There will be a little bit of cloves, maybe some allspice. There will be some ginger. There should be a little bit of cardamom. And there will be some pepper. And that'll probably be pretty much what's in there. Now, garam masala is interesting. The word masala, first of all, simply means mix. And so you can have all sorts of masalas. You could have 20 different masalas. But a garam masala is a mix that is generally made using, funnily enough, generally doesn't have cumin in it, even though we think of that as being very Indian. A garam masala will generally be made with cinnamon. It will also usually have a little bit of ginger in it. It will have fennel seed. It will have caraway seed. And it will have sometimes some black pepper. Garam masala is almost a finishing spice. It is used in the cooking for a lot of recipes. But often when you're making a curry, if you're giving it a slow cook in the oven, the garam masala is the very last ingredient you add. You don't dry roast it or you don't fry it up with the other spices. You simply sprinkle it over the top of the curry in the pot, pop it in the oven, don't even stir it through. Sprinkle it over the top, pop it in the oven, and then when it's cooked, you then stir that through. Because with the light flavour notes that it's getting from the caraway seed and the fennel seed, these are light anethol notes that are up there. If you fry those up or you dry roast those at the beginning, you're going to kill a lot of that freshness that you want. So that's why garam masala tends to be used at the end.
I think we could probably spend many hours standing here talking about this.
You know, we've scratched the surface. I can see looking down the row here at this lovely spice shop that there's probably about another 50 or 60 that we could talk about. Yeah.
So again, just to kind of sum things up, the purpose of this book that you, it's the latest edition.
It's the latest edition. It's the third edition. It's gone to 800 pages. And the second edition in 2007 won the IACP award for best reference book that year. And so I've built on that. And what I've really tried to do is really simply demystify. I think if people understand a spice, they know how it's used, they know a bit of its history. Our daughter Kate, who lives in London and trained professionally as a chef, has developed 120 new recipes for this book. She is a very talented cook. She grew up with spices, so they're in her blood as well. And the recipes are all accessible. She's developed them on household equipment. She hasn't used industrial equipment so she's developed and tested on domestic appliances. And her recipes are easy to follow and, of course, beautifully tasty. Make lovely natural foods taste great.
Thanks very much for your time today.
Real pleasure.